Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to part two of this very special show on the Square Ball Podcast. Dan and Michael here with you as we go into part two of Alan Sutton. Alan was the physio for Leeds for many a good year. And if you haven't yet listened to part one, go back and listen to it.
And if you've not subscribed to TSB Plus, get that. And then listen to the extra bit that's coming as well. So yeah. we've managed to get three parts out of him, which has been excellent.
Yeah, and that was just the tip of the iceberg because we sat and talked to Alan Sutton for hours and hours on that day. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think we need to get him back in because we more or less stopped at the mid-90s, didn't we? And there's an awful lot after that. So we'll get him in for another 4 hours or something another day.
In the meantime, enjoy part two of Alan Sutton. Yeah, and as Michael said, TSB Plus members, check your feed as well. Another half hour bonus stuff coming your way. Enjoy.
Fantastic 3 years. It wasn't easy behind the scenes. It was everything very, very professional. As for what you won, which I'm pleased for every Leeds United supporter, is they won the trophies. But at the same time, you missed a Billy era as well because the laughter, the fun, and think, so this was a really, really, and as I put the Norwegian society, you know, supporters from Scandinavia going to touch with me. I said, well, which were your favourite manager and all that? I said, well, obviously, Billy. I said, but Howard Wilkinson put Leeds United back to where they belonged. And it needed someone like an Howard Wilkinson with his thing. And again, I think because it was an outsider coming in, a bit like me, I wasn't a Leeds supporter going in.
Who did you grow up supporting, sorry?
Well, Bradford City, obviously, yeah. I used to follow all over the place, yeah. Right? And then I got into really great players, what I loved. And Man United at that time, I know everybody, but Man United, but with Duncan Edwards. And then the player I followed, but it wasn't because he went to Man United, the player I followed, who I really loved watching, and because I first came across him at Huddersfield Town with Dennis Law, and then I followed his career. I was fortunate to meet him at Big John's funeral. But also at that era as well, another great era, you know, back in the 50s, was John Charles. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember going to his last, mum and dad took me to his last game, you know, where you're on about age you were. I were only, you know, 1956, I'd be 10 year old. And they took me to his last game against Sunderland down here at Ellen Road. I remember that. And then, like I put in the book, I know the thought 30 years later, I'm having fish and chips with him on a Friday and him telling me about his great days at Juventus. And then, of course, he had that great, which I think you mentioned it, Michael, about Vinny Brocchi when they had testimonial for John Charles and Bobby Collins. Mm. When obviously you had Platini and all them playing.
Yeah, I got his autograph that day, Platini.
Did you really?
I did, yeah.
And I've got his shirt, and I've also got his autograph on it because Eric Cantona took it to Wembley when he was manager of France in 1992, and he got it to sign it for me. So I've got Platini's shirt from that, because in them days, people forget I was a kit man as well as a physio.
Yeah.
Up to them first 3 years, I had to do the kit on the match day. So after the game, I was collecting all the kit in as well as doing the treatment as well, you know, so that's how it was in them days.
So, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, the parallels between what Wilkinson did. You said it needed that outside voice to come in and just change things at Leeds. And there are real parallels with Bielsa, aren't there, about he came in with his own ideas and said, I'm the boss, this is how it's got to be.
Yeah, I only came across him once when at training ground talking to Calvin Phillips, because obviously I'd known Calvin since he was 17, 18, and just before I left Leeds, like, and became good friends. Yeah, as you said, it came in, the number of managers had had in. We had like the revolving door up at Pope Arch, and it just seemed to go on and on revolving. A manager would be there for about 3 or 4 weeks, and then he'd be out this way, and somebody else is coming in the other way. Like, you know, you're in that period when Cellino, when he came in,
yep.
Not the best of time, really. But first 16 years, at Leeds United, four managers. Then after that, whenever, you know, when it all went a bit pear-shaped, you know, when Peter obviously said, made his famous words, you know, we lived a dream, and we did. Mm. And then everybody lived a nightmare after it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially, and I'm talking about, I know the fans will never, but you had to be working up at Pope Arch, and the people behind the scenes, you know, in the offices, the canteen, or Isabel and Lado and all these people, and you really felt for them, because you know, obviously you're going to sleep and you don't know whether you're going to have a job or you're going to you have any money at the end of the week, like, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's how bad it really, people don't realise what it's like. And that's why I've wrote in my book as well, if I can just say,
yeah,
that's why I know people still hammer Alan Smith for going to Man United. But as he told me, he rang me, he said, Alan, I'll sign for Man United, but I'll tell you now, because the money what they've got for me, if that had been Portsmouth, West Ham, anybody who paid that money, I'd have signed for anybody just to make sure Leeds United were saved, because he's Leeds United through and through.
I mean, you must have some good memories from before it all went bad, you know, like the European times, because it catapulted us to a different level, didn't it?
It did. I suppose we're a bit like Portsmouth. Portsmouth ended up winning the cup with probably money they didn't have at the time, really. Like, you know, you can't take that away. And as a fan, if you're a fan, you must have loved it. I mean, all the tricks what we had, and we were going in planes, right? Honestly. I'll tell you what, I remember one time when we, when we got beat by Valencia. We're on a plane coming back. And I remember David Batty sat in his seat, and Alan Smith, he sat facing him with his back against another seat. That's how big a room you had.
Yeah.
You had about 747s or whatever. Just like 28 seats and all the rest were lounges. You know what I mean? And it was, you just can't believe it, the money what they laid, you know.
Yeah.
They laid out for them. It was, they did live the dream, but, you know, the same time.
But nice to be on the inside and enjoying that. I mean, I know, like,
It was fantastic. I mean, look, I remember Eddie Gray saying to me, there's nothing like the European nights, even when I were a player. It's a totally different night altogether. And they were right. You know, you're playing AC Milan, Real Madrid, Barcelona. Obviously, what I remember a little bit more about it is you had De Boyer and Woodgate Case going on at the same time. So whereas Woody were all right for the first lot, the second lot, obviously, but Lee Boyer, have you ever seen a player play better after being in court all day? It was like as if it was some release with him. I remember him coming down the tunnel, lads are coming in from having afternoon sleep, you know, getting himself sorted out, and he's walking in after being in court all day. I'd be getting him beans on toast. Come on, Lee. Let's get beans on toast for something to eat. And he'd go out there, like AC Milan, and scores a winning goal for you against AC Milan. And it was just like, it was just unreal. That crazy, crazy time, what was happening round about there, everything. But also, I'm thinking the other day, which I am really putting the book up, if you looked at the club, Leeds United, and obviously you've got to say Howard Wilkinson, what the architect of it. If you look at the 1990, from 1990 to 2000, nearly every team at Leeds United were winning something. The first team, 1992, the youth team, 93, winning Youth Cup. And then we call it, after having a poor, poor season, and whether Howard Wilkinson today, like what happened at Leicester, would have survived that second season after winning the championship. You know, because we're only 2 points from getting relegated that year.
Yeah.
I know we got there 2 games before when we knew we'd be safe, but would he have survived as a manager today? You know, in today's life.
Yeah, probably not.
You know, like what happened at Leicester with Rangier. And then from there, then we qualified then for Europe again. We played at Monaco with Yobo and everybody.
Yobo. Right?
Oh, yeah. I saw him in a different light than what probably the supporters and everybody else seen him.
What light did you see Tony Yobo in then?
Yobo. If you could get him fit, we got him fit for one season. Probably, right? And he probably played about a season now. That first season, he scored goals. And what he did, he like side put it into the net, a bit like an old Jimmy Greaves. The second season, as you know, Liverpool, Wimbledon, they just smashed them in. But I always remember when he first came, a bit like Badouka, actually. I remember the first game, right, his fitness was weirder. And so me and Mick Hennigan and the manager, I'd be running around the track at Ellen Road to get some fitness into him.
Right.
I'd take him down this side. Then Mick had taken him down that side. The manager taken to get some fitness into him. And the Dukes were the same, actually, when he first came, like, you know, he would never play. If you ever saw him in pre-season, you say, well, he's useless. He had this thing. He once did his medial ligament, he told me, in pre-season game. And after that, he played, but he never went out of his way to do anything. that we're going to put him under pressure. But once that, when we went to West Ham that first game, because that pre-season, I thought, is he ready for it? You know, is he ready? Once that gun went off, we went to West Ham, he scored both goals, we won 2-1.
And that volley as well.
And that volley. Yeah, was, well, that on the Monday after the West Ham, I think, wasn't it?
What was it? Oh, there were so many.
There was a West Ham one. It was open day, more or less took the back of the net off with that one as well. It was McCloskey in net. And
it might have been a half volley, mightn't it?
Yeah. He just sort of stands and looks at it and goes, well, I couldn't even see that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. But once that gun went, you saw a different person.
It's like, was it like a switch going off then when he got out there?
Yeah, like I said, it would all. I asked him, why? Well, I mean, pre-season, this is when you try and get your fitness, try and get your game time. No. He said, no, I'm not. He said, I got injured my knee. I do not play pre-season. That's when I got injured and I missed.
Is there anything you can do? I say you as a physio, but there's also Howard as the manager. Is there anything you can do about that? Or is it just a case of, well, do you know what? If that's what he's going to be like, if he keeps scoring, we just leave him
precisely,
alone.
Precisely. But that's it. I think precisely. The pre-season now to get what counts is that once that gun goes off, beginning of the season, that's what counts. You can win 7-8, whatever you want pre-season. It's what counts when that gun goes off. And that will end. And as you said, I think there were an interview when he scored the hat-trick at Wimbledon, right down at Selhurst Park. And I always remember he did an interview afterwards. Tony, what about that second goal? Do you know what really took off? And he probably, yes. Today, before I left, my wife said to me, Tony, I would like you to score a goal for me today. So I scored 3 goals for her today. And it was something like that interview. We were going, what? What? You know what I mean? It was so, he was something else. Once he got him fit, but when once his fitness went, then you know what I mean?
Was that why George Graham never used him really? Just couldn't get him fit enough?
Well, yeah. Well, I'd take him running. Like, we used to have a little thing, the Spofforth railway track down between Weatherby and Spofforth. It was like, all the runs I did, it were all measured out, time, everything. I remember measuring it were like 2¾ miles from where the old shed thing was out to Spofforth, and then 2¾ miles back. So everybody run together, out, and then everybody for himself coming back. Well, Tony, I mean, I must have been 40 years old with him. Well, he's just dancing back. I said, hey, you're supposed to be getting past me. Oh, yeah, I'm right. And you're not sort of like Noel Whelan, but we're already half a mile further down than you. Down you like, you know what I mean? And you just like dance back, like, you know, you just like, every dinner time, used to be him, Phil Missinger and Lucas Radebe, and they all used to have the meals together, like, you know what I mean? And they had that battle, like, you know. That's why when they played in African Nations, when Lucas really shouldn't have played, but anyway, that's another story with Wilkinson. But when he'd done his ACL and then he'd come back. Anyway, and I still say today, because you know what a great finisher he was, you know, Yobo. Well, in that semi-final, they played Ghana, and I think Lucas slipped and Yobo had gone past and he's missed. He's actually missed the target. And you say, Lucas, you know, Tony Ward never misses the target. And I'm not sure with Tony, I'm not sure how much football really meant to him. It was just easy for him. You know, it was just like, it, you know, he just played. And it was
because it was a God-given talent for Yobo, wasn't it? That's the thing. You watched him finish, and it looked like it was the easiest thing in the world because he was brilliant.
It was, you know, honestly, I have to wonder, you know,
did it come too easy to him? Maybe
I don't know. I think life, you know, just life was how it was. And obviously, I write obviously in there about what happened on League Cup final day. I don't know if you've seen the article where he pulls me before the game, start the game, half hour, kicking off at 5:00. 4:30, he pulled me and said, Alan, my knee's not right good. And I'm going, what? Because Jeff was in charge then, Jeff Ladley, and also Wilkins. I thought, oh. So what I did, I said, look, go out there, start the game, see how you go. And then after 10 minutes, whatever, if it's not right, go down. I'll prime Jeff, let him know that you might have a little problem with your knee. We'd already got Brian Dean and I think Thomas Brolin on the bench that day. So I said, you know what, man, I'm sure I can think from there. As it turns out, he played the full game. And he said, he played in, you know, in all the international matches and all that. I just don't know. I know we're rubbish on the day, like, you know what I mean?
But what was it like that day? Because, I mean, you mentioned Brolin being on the bench. I can remember the fans singing, why is Brolin on the bench? And
it turned on Wilco.
Yeah, that's
that day, wasn't
that
it?
That day, and I wrote in the book, and I didn't always get on with Al Wilkinson. We had his, you know, issues, right? That's what I'm always saying, that even today, I was still amazed I lasted 8 years with him. But as a physio, you do become friends with players, but you've always got to keep that little distance. You're always working for the manager, right? Anything I can find or anything I can drop him in what might just solve a problem without it gets out of hand. And that for me is the best way for the team going things. And you just observe without, you know, thinking from there. That's what,
so if you've spotted something, maybe a little conversation's happened, you might just relay to the manager.
Just certain things that you might, and I'll give him his credit, whatever it was, or there was an issue, it never went back to me. He never did it straight away. He just waited his time with, like, the captain, whoever the captain was. He had to have this relationships, and it was very, very good, you know, certain things like that, like, you know, so.
Yeah.
So I can't take anything away. And as going back to the beginning, as you said, with Bielsa, maybe that's what it needed. I mean, everybody gutted that Billy got. And as I put in the book, the day that Billy got fired, something happened I don't think has ever happened in football since. And that is the chairman, Mr. Silver, who for me, till today, was probably the best chairman ever at Leeds United. He had me in his office to explain why they sat Billy Bremner. Now, most chairmen nowadays wouldn't even know who the physio, but that's how the club was.
Yeah.
Everybody knew everybody at that club. We talk about the days when John Ray, Don Waters, everybody were on that team coach. Chairman, directors. Today, like, you've got about two or three coaches taking the staff and everybody.
Yeah.
And we'd all be playing cards. I always remember, like, Billy, me coming from Halifax Town, and we had Jim, who used to get on, and used to do your steak and chips with your peas and gatto, and he'd be serving everybody. And you come back, say, like, from Plymouth. In the end, Billy used to say, right, Jim, we're all eating pigs. Instead of having steak and chips and all this, we want steak sandwiches because it's interfering with the card game. So you'll have your steak sandwiches instead.
And these days, they're all having individual nutritional plans and all that sort of stuff, aren't they?
Hey, but also, like I said to me, Don Water thing and the power what they had. And to be fair, they were obviously Leeds United through and through in lots of ways. And Billy, I think, no, after one particular game, when we got a really heavy hammer, he said, right, you two, and me and Dave Bentley, who were the assistant manager, were in his office, right? And he said to John and to Don, he said, right, this is a title I want put on paper tomorrow. Right, I'm apologising to, when we got beat 7-2 at Stoke, he said, I'm apologising to the fans and everything, so I want this. And he was dictating what he wanted. And I know Rebbe really did have this.
He managed his press, didn't he? Very, very carefully. Yeah,
and they, what they call it. So, you know, they were allowed to go on the course because you get some reporter probably going on the course. I remember it being at Halifax Town, they allowed a reporter on. But then he's earwigging to all what's going on. And then he's printing little things, right. You know. And so they were so professional. They were here. The players were at back. They were here. And that was it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So I was going to say 1996 then, when just going back to the League Cup final, when the wheels start to come off for Howard Wilkinson, was there a sense that that was happening inside the club?
Yeah,
had the atmosphere changed?
Yeah, that day I'm sat behind the manager and he looked like a broken man. The way the fans reacted. And what I think for me, what they forget is, look what it took to get there. Now, on the day, nobody knows what's going to happen. You know, nobody knows what's going to happen on a day. You know, you just have a... And Villa did have a great, great track record at Wembley in League Cup finals. And it's like as if Villa didn't exist with the players. Oh, well, they're not as good as us. But, you know, they had a very, very good side, Villa. People don't realise what a good side they had, you know, that day. They forget, you know, we got through all them rounds, semi-final, everything to get there. And on the day, no, you know, nobody knows.
The fact that it was 5 o'clock kickoff probably didn't help. And everyone was boozing all day.
Yeah. You're probably right. I remember my friend Harvey Sharman, who became head physio. Harvey's a big Chelsea supporter. And one day, I've been doing some treatment with Mick Jones. And Mick, you know, great fella, Mick. You know, and as he come down, I said to Mick, oh, this is Harvey. He went head physio by then. This is Harvey. I said, big Chelsea supporter. And Mick said, tell you what, could always beat him in league, but could never beat him in cup.
Yeah.
And if you look at Leeds' cup record over the years, they won FA Cup, we won the League Cup. But, you know, look at how many finals, or look what they've done with Arabia, what they've lost. You know, they've never really, for me, been a cup team. We've always been like elite, like a marathon team. What, see out, you know, see out season, see out, grind them results out. As in some ways, as an outsider looking in some ways, looking back as a track record from there. A
couple of European semis, but yeah, domestically, waste of time every year. Out third round every year, isn't it?
But you're right, though. We have always tended to grind, and it's always been difficult as well, but we've ground out. You think back, the promotion season was a grind. Winning the title, we had to dig in towards the end, didn't we? Even promotion a couple of years back, it was a proper grind right until
And you look at 2010, when really we should have been up by end of by end of March that year, you know what I mean? But they got second place, didn't we? Get promotion that year.
So when Howard went in 1996, what was it like inside the club at that point when he went? Because the fans had pretty much turned, and there was the Man United 4-0, which was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. Do you think Howard, I don't want to chuck you under the bus here, but do you think Howard had lost it at that point, or did he deserve more time?
Funny enough, I think at the time, I'm not sure, I think we were somewhere like, or fifth in league or sixth in
not
league.
Not far off.
We weren't far off there, you know what I mean? But I got the feeling, my own little feeling, and this is only personal, that what happened at Wembley, it did seem to be a different person after that. You know, half time you come into a dressing room and players are having, we should be doing this, and then he'd come in and say, hey, you lot, shut up. This is what we're doing, this is what we're doing. And he seemed to lose a little bit of that after that. You know, I just thought he just lost a little bit of that after that. You know what I mean? It's quite as, especially when you had the Palmers and these people all playing at that time, that seemed to just go a little bit. And yet we started off quite well the next year. But also, it also tied in with, and I think it tied in with it with them selling the club as well to this Caspian.
Yeah.
So I think that had a bearing. So whether he would have stayed anyway or whether he'd have kept him, and I think probably bringing George Graham in, because as you know, he'd been on a suspension anyway because of what had happened at Arsenal with his thing. But I think he was very, very friendly with people from... So whether they would have said, we're going to change the manager anyway, regardless.
Mm.
Because, you know, I mean, look, we got beat by Man United, were it 4-0 or something like that? Yeah, we got beat.
But Cantona scored as well, didn't he, in that one?
He did, but he missed a penalty as well.
Yeah.
Because I remember at half-time, he missed a penalty in the first half. Because I remember at half-time coming in, he said, well, look, I'll tell you what, they're feeling the pressure same as us, because even Eric Cantona's missed a penalty. I remember that being said at half-time. Yeah. But for me personally, it were a horrendous weekend. Not just that, but my son's best friend in a bike ride, Matt Millen, got hit by a car, and he died the following day when we're all in. And I always remember going out, we all got called into the manager's office to say that, right, that's it, it's my last day, I've been finished this year. I'm finished. Paul Hart's taking over. And first thing Paul Hart said to me, you better ring Oldham up and tell Gunnar Haller, because we've signed Gunnar Haller. And he was due to come over that day and just say, can you tell him to say Gunnar Haller, hold on there, not to come yet, because the manager's gone and the new manager. I don't think Paul knew the new manager coming at that point. But obviously, George Grave came in the next day.
So when did you get to speak to Howard then as he was leaving? And what did
not,
he say?
Not really.
Is it not like a final goodbye?
No. It was just more or less a general thing to everybody that were leaving. And that's, I think I rang him maybe at home or something like that afterwards, what I mean? But that were it really, that were the end of it.
And presumably he would have been hurting at that point, so you've got words of consolation, even though you maybe clashed across the years.
Look, it's my relationship with him. Purely professional, purely what they call it. I know he once said about me. I know he once said about me. I once set a table at a dinner, and he were on top table. just like us around here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had person there. This is the early days of being at Leeds. And I must have got chatting about with this person here, and I got chatting with that person there. And he said to me next day, he said, I can't believe how you could just, I'm watching you, how you can just start up a conversation with somebody you haven't even known in your life. And you're chatting with him all night, and you chat with him all night. We're about this. He said, there's people what paid money to be able to communicate with other people who are in top jobs. But you see, I put that back to my life, you know, being Plaggett and Kerber. And it were up to me as a kid to learn how to have friends or meet friends.
Just
my upbringing, you know, living in Canada land, which I talk a little bit about that when I landed in Canada, Toronto, no job, nowhere to stay, you know, back in 1967. And so it were up to me to meet and communicate with people. You know, it became second nature to me probably in life. And I put in the book, like, you know, so after that, I thought, oh, it were like him throwing me a bone, you know what I mean? As a compliment, like, you know what I mean? So. But that's how it, you know.
That was the way of being nice.
That was the way of being nice, like, you know what I mean?
Maybe recognising a bit of a skill in someone else that he maybe didn't have himself, I guess.
Well, I think he had it, but he knew a lot. Like, I know Mick, I think he used to have tapes and that, you know what I mean, to try and improve himself, communicate with people. Mm. You know, it's like anything, you're about your boy scoring goals. I think the big problem with Eddie, well, definitely Billy, I think sometimes when they were managers, they expected everybody to be able to play like them. They can't, they're you know, because Gary McAllister's a great friend. And I said to Gary, you know, when he was manager and he had some of these players coming in, and then, you know, to play Ellen Road in front of that crowd, you know, there have been some great players for other clubs. They've come to Ellen Road and they've really struggled because they're in front of that crowd. Like,
Why is that?
Because they can be very unforgiving. And I'll give you a couple of examples. A lad who was at club who I rated really great, not only that, as a professional, he was brilliant. I couldn't take no away. He made maybe one mistake, two mistakes, and then you would have come play him again. But yet then he went to another club, played in Premiership, got player of the year, and were in the team all the time. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Nope.
Go on.
Stevie Craney.
Okay, right, okay. Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Yeah.
You remember in that bottom corner? And I think it was against Derby. He made a mistake and we got beat 1-0. But he knew the crowd then will never, they'd be waiting for him next time to make a mistake.
The Leeds United left back curse.
I was going
to
say,
took a long time to get over it.
And by the way, Ian Hart, I think he took a lot of abuse.
I think a lot of it goes back to Tony DiRigo being so good, probably. And so if he's the gold standard that you've watched, because I love Tony DiRigo, he's my favourite player. And then everybody who follows after him, you want him to be as quick and as direct. So Hart, he probably suffered by that.
You know, I know I mentioned it, but and I were there that day. You know where he got his nickname from, don't you?
Which one? Tommy DiRigo.
Tommy.
Yeah.
You know where that come from?
Where from?
When we first signed him, he had to have an hernia operation, so he didn't play for a while. So when we got him back, we were over in Ireland, right, in Cork, and he was sub. And so said, right, we'll put him out last 20 minutes. So this Irish announcer said, I'll talk to him about this. He said, Leeds United, you £1.2 million player, Tommy DiRigo.
All right.
And he said, and when I talked to Tony about this, he said, you know what worse for you was? He said, even the manager started calling me Tommy after
that. You just know when you're in a group of mates, like a group of blokes, like it's never going to go away, is it?
I know. And like, even now, I think Kells and I still call him Tommy. Yeah. But I still call him Tommy. Like, you're Tommy DiRigo. You know what I mean?
So you were basically in charge of multi-million pound assets, looking after their legs and making sure they could play. Do you ever kind of feel a sense of responsibility around that, where you're thinking, oh God, I've got to be careful here. This one's got expensive legs.
No. I just dealt with a person. An injury is an injury. And what I'm going to say, I was saying to you earlier, and I'll give you another example. Obviously, I were the physio for the first 7 years on my own. And then 93, and rightly so, Wilkinson decided that he brought Jeff Lavely back. Now, Jeff's a great friend. He got me a job in first place. But at that time, it were all changing. The Premiership were changing. Sky money were coming in. The players are saying, maybe we need more help. You know, I'm not sure about this. Fair enough. He brought Jeff in, so Jeff's in charge. I'm number two. And everybody said, oh, Sutton had been dropped to number two. But actually, now a lot of physios have said, right, that's it, I'm leaving. But no, I accepted. I could, you know, from being a Flaggan and Kerber, and this is where I write back at, and from being a Flaggan and Kerber, I'm at Leeds United as a physio. I started off as a glorified first aider, and I've ended up winning two championships. But also I recognised at that time the stress of it all was getting harder and harder. God knows what my blood pressure would have been at that point, because I know before I left, it was 190, 110 after one game.
Right, that feels high.
That is when you should be 135-80.
Yeah.
That war aye. And that was after the Man City game when I went with Bees to open. But no, so what I did, you see, whereas a lot of people would have said, that's it, because I won't charter anything, and that's what they're looking at nowadays. And I said, no, what he'll do now, it'll give me time to just do a bit of private physio, but also learn how to play golf, because I always wanted to learn how to play golf. And that's the way I looked at it, so I can get on with other things I want to do, but yet I'm still involved with the first team with everybody.
So you treat it as an opportunity rather than a door closing, yeah?
Of course, yeah. And also, I'm still going to be involved with the first team. You know, remember at the time I do the first team, I do the reserve. So I'm travelling with the reserve. That's what I'm saying. That's why me and my wife never saw each other. And she was a nurse. Yeah. So she had, you know, she was a community nurse. So that's why I'm going back to this, that 40 years, never seen each other type of thing. And I think the only ones, obviously, that I follow had more often, they're telling me to not to, were obviously I had two young children growing up. And obviously, I never really got to see them as much time as I wanted to spend with them. But, you know, they had no problem with that. So then I also be involved with the juniors as well. And you look at some of the players what came from them. So it gave me early doors of dealing with them. And I just treat them the same as I would first team or whatever, that's what I'm saying. So after the League Cup in 96, the juniors, because I'm involved with them, this is the start of another era. Then you've got the Woodgates, the Robinsons, the Matt Fales, and all these people all coming through. You know, Harry Kewells, they're all coming through. So I'm involved with them. And then I really got to know them. We went to Dallas Cup, so I went to Dallas with them. That season, I won the... Well, the season before, 96, they won the League Cup. And that was a start. And what people don't think... I know anyone said it's only the first team. But, you know, you've got to get these players winning. You know, mentality of winning. And that year, and that's when Mark Jackson and people like that... They had I always remember with Lee Matthews, on the Monday before the League Cup final against Newcastle at York on the Friday... He took him to Blackpool. He did a bit of bonding. I think he took them all out of school with Eddie Gray, Paul Hart, and I think Robin Ray all went to Blackpool. Well, Lee Matthew had a problem, and he was like great striker for him in them days, but youth team. So Artie said, right, is he fit? I said, well, it's 50-50 at the moment. So I'll tell you what, we'll run him from this pace to that pace. If he can run from this pace to that pace, then I'll consider him for Friday. So Lee said to me, Alan, I've no chance. I'm not honestly, you know, an ankle, you know. I said, I'll tell you what, come on, here's what we'll do. I said, give us 5 minutes, right, to Artie. So what I did, I took him down to the sea and put him in sea. Well, you know how cold sea is, right, in North Sea. And his ankle just froze up.
Yeah.
Right, he just went solid frozen. I said, right, what I'm going to do, you're going to run in the water. And it doesn't look like you're limping or out like that. And he run from pace to pace in the water, and we got through with it. He said, right, if you don't tell me anything else, what they call it, he said he's played on Friday. And I spoke to Lee with him since then. And he just said, Alan, he said, you worked with me all that week. And I know you worked mainly first team, but you know, you helped me out. The play he played, I put a strapping on, but more like a pot. All I can say is, they won 2-0. He made the first and scored the second. But the thing was, they started winning, that youth team started, learned how to start to winning. And they had that winning mentality. And that's where you start. Then the following year, they won the league and they won the FA Cup.
That's the FA Youth Cup, isn't
FA it? Youth Cup. They won the FA Youth Cup. And then you started to get like the Woodgates and all that. And then, of course, that was during George Graham time. Then, of course, just after that, he left, didn't he? Mm-hmm. So straight away, O'Leary gets the job and he put Stephen McPhail and Jonathan Woodgate into the first team against Forest or something like that. So what I'm saying, look how many players you got out of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's getting that winning mentality. And even like the Paul Shepherds, I know he's doing time at the moment, but Paul Shepherd, Mark Jackson, Jacko, he's in the first team. Andy Cousins gets a run in the first team. That's from the 93 FA Youth Cup winning side. And then you look then to 2000, and then you're into Champions League as well. You're in your. So you look at that 10 year from 90 to 2000, of what really the club did at every level. And also, after 97 winning FA Youth Cup, the following year, the reserves won the league, beating Man United Liverpool for the league. People forget about that.
People forget about the reserves, that even was a thing as well, because that's gone now, isn't it? It's the 23s now.
But... Yeah, but the reserve, and they won the reserve.
Yeah.
97-98 season, they won the reserve league.
And it was a lot of those young lads, wasn't it? Who were...
A lot, yeah. You've got Robert Molyneux there. You've got Lee Matthews. You've got Matt Fale. You've got Woodgate. You've got Mark Jackson. Damien Lynch. Who didn't quite just make it, but they're all Andy Wright, who's now one of the coaches up there, he was all part of it, like, you know what I mean? A little right, like,
it's about setting a culture at a club, I guess, isn't it? And I guess Thorpe Arch helped with that as well, as about pushing the club forward.
Yeah, I think he did. I mean, obviously the manager wanted a separate place, and I can understand why, because for the first 10 years, you lived, breathed, played everything but at Elland Road. When you went to Thorpe Arch, you only saw Elland Road on a match day. So it's like, a big lift, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then again, you see, then you look at Fulton Car Park, you know, now, but when it were them two pitches, that were legendary in football around the world, that Fulton Car Park. Like, I mean, obviously, damn United also.
Yeah.
Also showed you just what, you know, what it was in them days, like, you know.
Yeah, and the, like, the blue facade of the West Stand and all that, yeah.
That's what I talk about that first day I go to park my car up, which were an old banger, I think, in them days. But some Indian, I got a deal over in Bradford with some Indian people, like, you know. And I walked through then and look up at the blue sign, and you opened that door, and I said, once I walked through there, every day had to be like the first day, because it could also be your last day as well. And that was the attitude you had to have. And I think that's the problem is with a lot of people. They get lazy and
I've arrived now, yeah.
I've arrived, but no, it's every day you have to go with the same attitude and give it your best shot for everybody, like, you know what I mean? And that were it, you know.
Well, listen, I would say we've spoken for bloody ages now.
And I feel like we're still only about a third of the way through.
I know. But what we'll do is we'll do some more stuff, a couple more questions for our TSB Plus members as well, a couple of questions, if you don't like to just hang around.
No problem at all.
So if you're a member, you can find those over on the TSB Plus feed. But thank you so much for coming in. And we'll give another mention to the book, which is My Journey There, Pavement, because you were putting down pavements and curbstones, weren't you?
If you look
you've referred to it throughout this story, but we haven't explained that's what you started out as.
Yeah, I started off with a flag and a curb.
Putting down pavements in Bradford.
Yeah, and also what happened then, I was playing football. I actually ended up, and there's a picture in there, I actually ended up playing for Bradford Park Avenue over the 4th Division team in their reserves.
Bigger than Bradford City as well, some would tell you.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think at that time, they'd always get if both teams were equal, Park Avenue will get at least 3,000 people more than what Bradford City would at that point.
Mm.
But, you know, there's a photograph there, and I'm playing with, like, Kevin Hector, who went on to play for Derby County, and people like that. And Eric Burns, who was in there, I've just been in Australia, and I met up with him, I hadn't seen him in 55 years, and we met up while we were in Australia this time, like, you know. And, some great people.
Yeah, there's some great photos. I'm just flicking through looking at the photos now of you with so many characters from the recent and not too recent history of Leeds United, and it's brilliant. I can't wait to read it, actually.
And obviously, I spent a lot of time with Lucas, and there's a picture in there where we're at his wedding in South Africa. And it's Lucas for another he came over, him and Phil Massinger, just to spend time with him when he had this injury, and he'd been on a Sunday morning, and he'd tell you about life with apartheid and what happened to him. And I actually went to his house in Soweto. And if you saw where he lived, and to get out of there and end up have a career in Premiership like he did, I think I did all right by being a flagger and curber. But I'll tell you, no compared to what he
I was going to say, I know it's a bit dangerous in Bradford sometimes, but you probably didn't get shot.
No. Bradford in them days, the 60s, was a great city, I'll tell you that. It was a fantastic city.
I live there, it's still fine, it's all right, most of it.
Well, you know.
Some of it, but listen, Alan, thank you so much for coming. It's been brilliant, and I feel like we could do another 5 hours. So you stay there, and we'll get the camp beds out, and we'll stay up all night and do it. But sincerely, thank you, and please do go buy the book. It's available now. You can get it on Amazon and all good bookshops. I think
Leeds United have got it in theirs, and Waterstones said they're putting it in theirs as well.
If you're watching the video version, there it is on screen for you. That Alan Sutton, My Journey, and it's. I'm going to say it's a brilliant read. I know it's going to be a brilliant read before I even get into it. So I look forward to reading that.
Problem is, I've probably told you after story, so you might have to skip some of it.
No, there's absolutely bucket loads in there. Alan, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you very much. Cheers.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders that we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.